Today's daf is Be'yo Daf Beis, and we are Be'ezus Hashem, in the beginning of a new Mesechta, Mesechta's Be'yo. Today's daf's being learned as a Schus Refuah Shalema for Shlomo Ben Zara Aliza, Avadya Ben Miriam Leia, Moshe Abba Ben Devora, Devora Bas Mecha, Shmu Ben Tehila, Baruch Bendit Ben Devora Hinda, Shoshana Bas Rus, Chayim Moshe Ben Esther, and Tamar Bas Chasida from a Rivka. So, Mesechta's Be'yo requires a little bit of an introduction. So the name of the Mesechta is Mesechta's Be'yo. The reason the Mesechta is called that is because the first word of the Mesechta is the word Be'yo. Be'yo Shenolda Beyontif. The truth is the title of the Mesechta is a little misleading because it sounds a little bit like Mesechta's Be'yo talks about eggs. The truth is, that's very much not the case. The first halacha of the Mesechta involves a beitza, and as a result, the name of the Mesechta is per the first word of the Mesechta. But really, the Mesechta doesn't talk about eggs. What it talks about is dinei yomtif. And the truth is, if you look in the Rishonim, there were many Rishonim that used to refer to this Mesechta as Mesechta's yomtif. So we have Mesechta's Shabbos. Mesechta's Be'yo, in many ways, is Mesechta's yomtif. And the truth is, the primary topic of the Mesechta are dinei yomtif. And in that sense, it complements Mesechta Shabbos. Mesechta Shabbos deals with the laws of Shabbos. Mesechta Yontif deals with the laws of Yontif. Now, the laws of Yontif in many ways are very similar to the laws of Shabbos. And that's why, as we're going to see, there's going to be overlap and crossover in the sugis that we're going to learn in Mesechta Be'yo versus some of the sugis that we learned in Mesechta Shabbos. So, for example, you're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. What's the definition of malacha? La mites malachas. In that same vein, you're not allowed to do malacha on Yontif either. There are lamites melachis, theoretically, that one is not allowed to do on Yontif. Stating that, there are two major differences between the issa melacha on Shabbos and the issa melacha on Yontif. Number one, the Mishnah says, Mesechtes Megillah Dav Zayin Amud Beis. Everybody knows the Mishnah. Ein bein Yontif l'Shabbos, ela oichel nefesh bilvad. You're not allowed to do melacha on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do melacha on Yontif. But there is a major difference between Shabbos and Yontif, and that is meleches oichel nefesh. The Torah says, as it relates to the iser melacha on Yontif, ach asher yeyochel l'chol nefesh, hu levado yeyosel lochem. That even though you're not allowed to do melacha, but ach asher yeyochel l'chol nefesh, if this is a melacha that involves preparing food, it involves quote-unquote oichel nefesh, then even though it would be considered a malacha on Shabbos, but on Yontif, you'd be allowed to do the malacha. So the first major difference as it relates to Issa Malacha between Shabbos and Yontif is in terms of the kamus. Quantitatively, how many malachas is one not allowed to do on Yontif? It's not the same as on Shabbos. On Shabbos, the number's 39. On Yontif, it's 39 minus any malacha that's a meleches oichel nefesh. So if this malacha is oichel nefesh, for example, cooking, baking, so those malachas you would be allowed to do on Yontif. Now, how do you determine meleches oichel nefesh? So that's something that is going to be a major topic in the course of the Mesechta. The other difference as it relates to doing malacha on Shabbos versus doing malacha on Yontif is qualitatively, and that is, if someone does malacha on Shabbos, if somebody's a mechalel Shabbos, if he did it b'mezid, purposely, knowingly, with edim, hasra, he was warned, he was told that what he's doing is very, very bad. Back in the day, he was chayev misas bezdin, he was chayev skila. If somebody was mechalel Shabbos b'mezid, there were no edim, or there were edim, but there was no hasra, he was chayev karas. If somebody was mechalel Shabbos b'shoigig, he needed kapara, he had to bring a carbon, he had to bring a carbon chatas. That's all true for someone that's mechal Shabbos. If somebody's mechal Yontif, even a malacha that he's not allowed to do on Yontif, there's no skila, there's no karis. If he does it b'shoigig, there's no chatas. What is it? It's a chayve lavin. He violated a loisase. If someone's over a loisase, he gets malchus. Here too, he would get malchus. But the point is that a malacha on Shabbos is a lot more chamor than a malacha on Yontif. If someone does a malacha on Shabbos, there's skila, there's karis, and there's chatas. If someone does a malacha on Yontif, it's considered a chayve lavin. So you're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do malacha on Yontif. However, there are differences between Shabbos and Yontif, and just to simplify it, for the sake of a brief introduction, there's a difference in terms of the quantity of the malacha, and there's a difference in terms of the quality of the malacha. There's a difference in kamus, and there's a difference in echos. In kamus, 39 malachas on Shabbos, on Yontif, not 39 malachas, you're allowed to do a malacha that's eichel nefesh. So it's going to be 39 minus something. But echos, if someone does a malacha on Shabbos, it's so chamor, skila, karis. Even b'shoigig, he has to bring a carbon chatas. If someone does malacha on Yontif, all it is going to be a chai ve'lavin. The truth is that in addition to the iser malacha on Shabbos, there are also other things that one is not allowed to do on Shabbos. So for example, you're not allowed to do malacha, your behemah is not allowed to do malacha either. It's what's known as shvisas behemah. It's a sugya, a whole perek in Masechta Shabbos, Bameh Behema Yoytzes, that deals with this halacha of Shvisas Behema. The Shvisas Behema on Shabbos, the Shvisas Behema on Yontif as well. You're not allowed to do malacha, so your animal's not allowed to do malacha either. On Shabbos, one is not allowed to go outside the tchum. It's not one of the lametes malachas, but there's an iser tchumen. According to some Tanam, tchumen is even deiraisa. Yontif, there's also a Nisr Tchumen. Another halacha that you have on Shabbos, that you also have on Yontif, and this halacha, and this idea is going to be the first sugya in Masechtas Beah. It's a sugya that, even though it's discussed in great detail in Masechtas Shabbos, is often synonymous with Masechtas Beah, and that is Muktzah. So there's an idea that one is not allowed to be metaltel, you're not allowed to carry, or eat Muktzah on Shabbos. The same is true as it relates to Yontif as well. And really, as part two of our brief introduction, we need to reintroduce and reacquaint ourselves with the basic laws of Muktzah, as it is going to very much be the topic of the beginning part of the Masechta. So what's the halach of Muktzah? The word Muktzah means it's cast aside. Muktzah means that there's something that you have, but you put it aside. It's not something that you're interested in right now. It's not something that you're focusing on right now. If someone has an item in his house that in the beginning of Shabbos was muktzah, it was cast aside, it wasn't something that he intended on using on Shabbos, the halacha is you're not allowed to use it at any point during the course of Shabbos. So if at the beginning of Shabbos, bein hashmoshes, quote unquote, this something was muktzah, the halacha is you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos. What does that mean? In other words, in more practical terms, if you want to use something on Shabbos, you need to prepare that thing. That item needs to be mukhan. It needs to be prepared. Mukhan is the inverse of muktzah. If something is muktzah, you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos. If something is mukhan, that's when you are allowed to use it on Shabbos. Mukhan means you prepared it for Shabbos. Muktzah means you didn't prepare it for Shabbos. It was something that was set aside. It was something that was cast aside. It was something that at the beginning of Shabbos, you had no intention of ever using. Now, it would sound a little bit like, based on the idea of muktzah or mukhan, a yid, right before Shabbos, when you're making your final preparations, asartem, aravtem, hidlaktem esaner, right, when you go ahead and you do the basic things that you're supposed to do before Shabbos, you should have to start walking around your house and start saying, okay, what do I want to be making for Shabbos? I want this, I don't want that, I'm going to use that keli, I'm going to eat that, I'm going to learn from that sefer, right? Start going through your Shabbos, through your house, and determine what you're going to want to use, what you're not going to want to use. It's like this, you could be mechin, you can prepare the things you're going to want, and whatever you don't want will end up being muktzah. The truth is, you don't have to do that. You're not obligated before Shabbos to go and start preparing, making mukhan the things that you want to use on Shabbos. And the reason is, because everything in your house is considered mukhan until proven otherwise. So unless you can prove to me and make a good rational argument why you should think that even though this thing was sitting in my pantry, but at the same time it was muktzah and it wasn't something that I really was going to maybe use on Shabbos, that halacha is I'd be allowed to use it. So you don't have to proactively go around your house and start preparing things for Shabbos, but rather anything that you have in your house on Shabbos is presumed to be mukhan, unless there's a good reason to assume that it's not mukhan. In that case, it's going to be muktzah. So what are examples of muktzah? So there's many, many examples. We'll just mention a few. The most classic example of muktzah is when something's muktzah machmas gufay. You have an item, an object, that's inherently something that people don't use. The classic example is a rock. an even, a stone. These are things that don't have any real purpose. There's no hishtamshus that people usually use these things for. And as a result, if you have a rock in your house on Shabbos, unless you were making it before Shabbos, the assumption is it's mukta why machmas gufay, because of who it is. When the rock looks in the mirror, it sees a rock. It sees something that nobody uses. And as a result, it's mukta machmas gufay. That's your classic example of something being mukta. There's a concept of mukta machmas mios, where you have something that, you know, maybe people would use, but it's very disgusting in the beginning of Shabbos. And because of that, machmas mios, because it's disgusting, it's something that, even though it's in your house, but you probably weren't going to use it, and as a result, it's considered mukta. You won't be able to use it on Shabbos. Keli shemelachtoi le'iser. Kalim that you have in your house that you use all the time, but at the same time, it's melachta l'isser. When you use it in the normal way of using it, you're violating an isser. So your telephone, for example. A phone is something that people use, but at the same time, using your phone involves something that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Therefore, even though your phone technically is something that you use, but on Shabbos, being that using it involves an isser, it's considered mukta. Meaning, not only can't you use your phone, that you can't do anyways, but you can't even be metaltel your phone. You won't even be able to touch it. And the reason is because it's mukta. Another example of mukta, and that's the one that we're going to talk a lot about in the beginning of the Masechta, is noilad. Something that didn't exist. You didn't own it in the beginning of Shabbos, but it was something that was born. It was created on Shabbos. That, too, even though this thing that now was noilad on Shabbos is something that theoretically you would love to use, but at the same time, being that you didn't have it in the beginning of Shabbos, you obviously weren't making it for Shabbos, it's considered to have been mukta, and as a result, this is something that you would not be able to use on Shabbos. So again, the concept of mukta, or the inverse of mukta, the flip side of the same coin, Mukhan is that if you want to use something on Shabbos, you have to prepare it. If you prepare for Shabbos, you can use it on Shabbos. Misha tarach be'erev Shabbos, yitaltol b'Shabbos. That's how it works. Now, stating that, you don't have to go and start making and being making everything in your house, but rather we presume that the things in your house are considered mukhan until proven otherwise, and there's a whole list of examples of what would be the definition of otherwise. We mentioned mukta machmas gufoy, we mentioned mukta machmas mios, keli shemelachta le'iser, or the beya case, which is the case of noilad. Now, when you talk about mukta, one last point, there were two primary shitas in Shas, machloikis tanon, as to the extent of the laws of mukta. And that's machloikis Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda. Reb Shimon was very, very makel in the laws of mukta. And that's when you learn the sugyas of mukta, there are many, many kulois that are attributed to the Tana Reb Shimon. Stam Reb Shimon is Reb Shimon Bar Yechai. And Reb Shimon Bar Yechai was very, very makel in the laws of mukta. Reb Shimon's primary Baal Plukta in Shas is Reb Yehuda. And Reb Yehuda argued with Reb Shimon as it relates to mukta. And Reb Yehuda was more machmer than Reb Shimon when it came to mukta. There happens to be a third shita, the shita of Reb Nechemya, who's even more machmer than Reb Yehuda. But when you learn the sugis of mukta, there's two primary opinions, and that is Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda. Reb Shimon is mekel mukta. Reb Yehuda is machmer mukta. The emes is throughout Shas, the Gemara refers to Reb Shimon shita mukta as Reb Shimon lesle mukta, and it's a tremendous misnomer because it sounds like Reb Shimon didn't hold of the laws of mukta, and that's not true. Reb Shimon very much held of mukta. When we say Reb Shimon was lesle mukta, what we mean is that Reb Shimon was mekel mukta. Lesle, he took the edge off of mukta. He didn't hold the mukta so chamur, it's so stark like Rabbi Yehuda did. I've rather Rabbi Shimon held the mukta. But whenever you talk about mukta, there's two shitas. Rabbi Shimon's lesle mukta, Rabbi Yehuda's isle mukta. Now, what exactly is the machloikis Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda? Clearly, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda both held of the idea of mukta, but they had a different understanding of it. They had a different conceptual understanding of it. Rabbi Shimon's mukta was much more kulodig than Rabbi Yehuda's mukta. The truth is, it's a very, very hard question to answer, to try to really come up with a clear understanding of what Reb Shimon's mukta is, what Reb Yehuda's mukta is. It's something that's discussed a lot in Masechta Shabbos. To go through the sugyas in Masechta Beya here in the beginning, it would really be kedai to go through that as well. But what we need for our daf yomi purposes is that there's a machloikis Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda. Reb Shimon was mekel, he was lesle mukta. Reb Yehuda was machmer, he was isle mukta. Just to end with one final note, and that is, there's a little bit of a debate as to what the right pronunciation of the name of the Masechta is. I mean, you open up the Masechta, it sounds like it should be called Masechta's Beitza. Beis Yud Tzadik Hei. According to the Aleph Bina, the way you would read it is Beitza, stating that the Minig Yisrael is to refer to the Masechta as Masechta's Beya. And the question is, what's the right pronunciation? Is it Beitza or is it Beya? And if it's Beya, then why is it Beya? After all, it's written Beitza. But there is a clue right here on the Amid, and that is if you look at Rabbeinu Chananel in the Hakdama to his Pirish on the side of the Gemara, so he starts off, he says, Aschel Masechtes Beitza, Be'ezras Godol Ha'etza. So it's clear that Rabbeinu Chananel started with a little bit of poetry, and the word Beitza and the word Eitza were meant to rhyme. Now, if it's Aschel Masechtes Beya, then it wouldn't be Be'ezras Godol Ha'etza. So obviously it's Aschel Masechtes Beitza, Be'ezras Godol Ha'etza, and this is a raya that the Velt brings from Rabbeinu Chananel, that the right way to pronounce the Masechta is not Masechtes Beya, but rather it's Masechtes Beitza. The Heilige Chasam Sofer also wrote a Hakdama to Masechtes Beitza, and he too began with a little bit of poetry. This is the way the Chasam Sofer began. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, Mashachonani Hashem Yisbarach, Chidushim Masechtes Beitza, Yishtabach Ravo Alilio V'Godol Ho'etza, Hayreni B'derech Ukecha, V'derech Mitzvah Yisecha Arutza, V'Zakeini Lilmoidu L'lameid, Yofutsu Maynoisai Chutza, Hayom lasoyson lishmar ulekayim miligdar kol pirza. So in the raid, we'll get back to the Hakdama of the Chasam Sofer, but it's very, very clear. This is an extended version of what Rabbeinu Chananel said in the beginning of the Masechta. Ho'itza, arutza, chutza, pirza. It's all rhyming with Beitza. So it seems that the proper pronunciation is probably Beitza, stating that in Yeshiva, it's called Masechta Zbeya, and as a result, in Unzer Chabura, we're starting Masechta Zbeya. So on that note,